Hello. It's fabulous awards season from our lovely living room. I'm not telling people where we live.
In the sticks.
In the goddamn nowhere where it's cheap.
Welcome to The Arts Hole. This is the podcast where we take apart pieces of art and see if we can put them back together again just a little bit better. My name's Bea Roberts. I'm a scriptwriter and a script doctor. With me I have Mr. Luke Haynes.
And I'm being stood on by the dog.
Yep, Disco the podcast puppy. Nay, we should be calling her the pod dog. She's nearly three.
Yeah, dog cast. Yeah. I don't know, something in there. She's always a puppy.
It's hot. It's topical. It's just been released.
Yeah, it's Barbie.
Barbie, we're going to talk about the Barbie movie finally.
Yeah, we wanted to do some award season topical stuff, an award season topical thing. And you saw Barbie in cinemas. I didn't because we're poor. And now we've finally seen it at a discount. So I have seen the Barbie movie, Discount Barbie.
Also, I think the Barbie month was such a huge deal, and it meant a lot to me. So I saw it in the cinema twice because I was so desperate to see it that I went when it opened, and I also had promised to go and see it with my sister. Yeah. So I lied, pretended that I hadn't seen it, and went with her as well.
I don't think she listens to the show.
She doesn't listen to the show, so it's fine. And both times I was in the cinema surrounded by people wearing bright Barbie pink.
Yeah.
It was like, and all, you know, old lots of grandmas and kids and men and like younger men, and just like it was like everybody was there for Barbie, and that never fucking happened.
Yeah, it was a real cultural moment, along with Oppenheimer. Barbenheimer. This was a whole thing. If this podcast is somehow the only thing that survives the end of the world, and you find this in a tape recording in the wreckage, Barbenheimer was a thing. The two big movies last year that summer were the Oppenheimer biopic and Barbie, and they went head to head.
We went head to head, but
neither, so I win.
But it's, do you know what, how I feel about the Barbie movie? It's a little bit how I feel about when you see a video of a really happy rescue dog.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really happy. It was a brilliant, beautiful, wonderful thing that all these people came out for this feminist movie. And it was such a huge, big box office smash and everything.
Yeah.
But I'm also sad. I'm sad, you know, like, I'm sad that the dog had to be in a rescue shelter. I'm sad that there are so few big female focused movies on the landscape that this becomes such a, because it's not just because it's Barbie, because it's, a lot of people don't really care about Barbie. I don't have strong opinions on Barbie as IP, as intellectual property, but the fact that it we just don't get films sort of made by women, sort of powerhouse, huge, big budget movies for women, it makes me a little bit sad that it then becomes such a moment, you know?
Yeah, and that it was something. Barbie on the surface is something quite sort of facile, right? Mm. It's like that we only get a woman's movie if it's about a doll. It's kind of a shit, but we'll get to it.
But because it was such an important, and I want to preface this whole thing, I didn't want to talk about Barbie because our show is fundamentally about kind of finding some flaws and then looking at solutions.
Yeah.
And I do think this is a flawed movie, but I also think it's a really, really important movie, and I don't want to take that from anybody. So all of the things that we're going to say are said with a huge amount of love and respect and admiration for what this movie did and is.
Yeah, it's an important film, and it brings up important questions. You know, was Barbie right to drop the bomb on Hiroshima? Wait, I was in the wrong screening, I'm sorry.
Why did they cast Cillian Murphy?
I know. Why is everyone smoking?
I know he's versatile, but come on.
I'm going to do the plot. If you haven't seen Barbie, go out and see it now, because I'm going to ruin it.
Mm-hmm.
We do a really good intro, which is the 2001 intro. If you're not a movie nerd, if you didn't get this, in Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey, we start with sort of proto-human ape creatures that come across an alien artifact, which then sort of rewires their brains and sets them on the road to being human and sort of kickstarts their evolution. And we do the same thing with little cave girls who are playing with dolls, and a voiceover from Helen Mirren says that, like, in before Barbie, dolls were literally baby dolls. You could only get a doll that was a baby. Your job as a little girl was to pretend to be a mother, and that was it. And then they discover, in the same way that the apes discover the monolith, they discover a giant Margot Robbie in the desert who is a giant Barbie. And the narrator points out that, like, Barbie comes along and girls can now play with women, and that the women dolls, the Barbie doll, which is a full-grown woman, can be things, can have a job, can have roles. Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
And that this was a kickstarting of evolution of the doll, basically.
Which I think is actually true.
Yeah, it's a very well-made point. Yeah.
Do you know, I had one baby doll when I was a kid, because I've never been interested in being a mother. Yeah. And the clue, I think, for this, when I was about four, my baby doll's name was Woof. I think it was very early signalling that I'd actually prefer a dog.
Yes. let's not dig too deep into our respective childhoods. It's going to get dark. So we see Barbie, as played by Margot Robbie. Good casting, I have to admit.
Great casting.
Barbie wakes up in Barbie World, which is a utopia. It's briefly touched on that corporations are not treated as people within Barbie World, which is a very easy get to improve the world. Women are in charge. Ken, meanwhile, is an insecure guy who just lives for Barbie's attention. That's his whole job, is to be paid attention to by Barbie.
Yeah, he's an accessory.
Yes, yeah. We see him getting injured attempting a surfing stunt trying to impress Barbie.
And this is, it's glorious.
Oh, it looks fantastic.
It looks incredible, and it's so joyful. It is like dopamine eyeball.
Yes, everything's like hot pink and sunny and beautiful.
Everything looks incredible, yeah.
But during a perfect party of the kind she throws every night, Barbie briefly breaks her reality by considering her mortality.
Yeah.
And then sort of shakes that off as a weird blip. Ken wants to stay over at her house that night, but he's not sure why, because they don't have genitals. As is actually explicitly stated later in the film. Barbie says no, but is again troubled by thoughts of death. Next morning, things are no longer perfect and Barbie is no longer magic. The other Barbies encourage her to seek out the advice of Weird Barbie, a once-perfect Barbie, who was played with too hard in reality and is now broken.
Another brilliant touch. Everybody had a Weird Barbie. I had a Weird Barbie.
I did not have a Weird Barbie. But yeah. Weird Barbie explains that Barbie's dark thoughts are the result of whoever is playing with her in the real world. And that she has to go out and find the girl who... I'm going to say, like, this is a thing that I have a little bit of a problem with. She has to go and find her owner.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to use the word owner, which implies that, like... There's got a sort of slavey connotation, which is a bit uncomfortable. The idea that, like, little girls own sentient Barbies is a little bit awkward and weird.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of conceptual world smashing together here that you just kind of have to ride with it.
Yeah, so basically Barbie has to go into the real world and find her owner, who must be sad, and try to work out why she's sad. We then get a beat from The Matrix, where she has to decide whether she stays in fake reality or sees the real world. Yeah. She has to choose a hand. Huh, that's weird. I don't know why that happened. Ken stows away and insists on accompanying Barbie to the real world. When they arrive, they are respectively disturbed and overjoyed to learn that the real world is A, imperfect, and B, run by men. Barbie is freaked out by this and feels deeply uncomfortable. Ken starts to realise that, hey, this is pretty great. By concentrating, Barbie establishes a link with the girl who is playing with her, who is having trouble in school, she thinks. The FBI in the real world then contacts Mattel, the owners of the Barbie brand, to tell them that two of their dolls are loose in reality and must be stopped. The all-male board of Mattel vows to put Barbie back in her box, which is a literal giant box that they're going to put her in. A Mattel secretary, played by America Ferrara, who has been designing sadder Barbies, overhears the meeting. Barbie goes to her owner's school, or goes to the girl's school, expecting to be venerated due to Barbie's positive influence on young women. But the teen girls pillory her for being a terrible role model and vacuous and a blow to feminism.
It's all of this is so smart.
Yeah, and this is a valid argument to have, right? Because as the narration established, she was the first doll that wasn't just teaching you to be a mother and nothing else, but also now Barbie is kind of a shorthand for vacuous bimbosity, if that's a word.
I think the thing is that she's an adult woman, but, you know, as you can find, we'll find a link for it, but basically her proportions are completely anatomically impossible.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't...
For Margot Robbie.
You couldn't be a human being who has the hips ratio and tits and everything of a Barbie, like, and with her head, like, even her head is completely out of proportion to everything else. So, like, she has... She's both, and that's what this film is tackling, is that she both opened things up and closed things down.
Yeah. Ken, meanwhile, is enraptured by male-dominated reality, although he does end up frustrated that he isn't allowed to be a surgeon or similar just because he's a man. He can't just turn up anymore and walk into a job as whatever he wants, like he used to be able to, maybe. I don't know how true that is, but it feels true.
I mean, it's the gesture of it, isn't it?
Yeah. Mattel arrives at the school to capture Barbie at the same time that America Ferrara arrives to pick up her daughter, who is the girl that has been playing with Barbie.
Yeah.
Ken decides not to go with her, but to return to Barbieland and teach all the other Kens what he's learned.
The patriarchy.
Yes. Barbie is once again disturbed to learn that no women are in charge of Mattel. Realising that the box they're trying to put her in is a trap, she flees, finding a hidden room where Rhea Perlman, playing a character called Ruth, Ruth lives in solitude. This is a sort of a weird beat where there's like a weird hidden room where Ruth lives.
Yeah, we find out she's a ghost. This is another, the world's just, worlds are colliding and smashing and don't worry about it.
Escaping the building, Barbie is rescued by America Ferrara and her daughter. I don't know what America Ferrara's character is called.
Yeah, shall I look it up?
Yeah. The mother admits that she's been lonely and playing with the old Barbie doll that she used to play with her daughter, and that it's been her thoughts that are causing the thoughts of death and giving Barbie cellulite and all these things that like people have trouble with. Basically, the
She's called Gloria, and I feel like that's the first time I've ever heard that.
Okay, so I'm just going to keep calling her America Ferrara because that's the actress.
Her daughter's called Sasha, which we do hear a few times.
But yeah, America Ferrara's been playing with her daughter's Barbie and causing Barbie's world to go haywire with her own sadness as a middle-aged woman. Barbie decides that they need to escape and hide in Barbie Land. Arriving back in Barbie Land, Ken has changed it, and now the female president is enjoying not having any responsibilities and serving beer to men on the beach. Ken's changes manifest in the real world, and his line of macho bullshit toys become a huge success, to the chagrin of Mattel's CEO, who is ultimately kind of portrayed as a feminist at heart. Right? He wants to do right by young girls and give them good aspirational toys. That's
what he says.
Yeah, he's not portrayed as a sort of standard monstrous CEO. Will Ferrell is playing him.
I mean, the way that they portray all of the Mattel executives are like they're as cartoony as the Barbies are. Yeah. They are like running around, like the chase scene with Barbie is brilliant. They are like, you know, running around.
Like a Scooby-Doo cartoon.
Like a Scooby-Doo cartoon, running in and out of things, falling over things. Like they behave like a cartoon is the best way to describe it.
Most women in Barbie Land love no longer having to think or have jobs. Ken blames Barbie, saying that he would not have had to take over if he'd felt respected to begin with. Barbie, freaked out by the changes, resolves to just lie down and hope a leadership Barbie can come along and fix it. America Ferrari and her daughter leave her, the daughter saying that Barbie is exactly who she feared she was. That Barbie's not going to fight for anything, she's just going to give up and be useless and blonde and pretty, rather than taking a stand. Barbie becomes horribly depressed, creating Depression Barbie in reality. Weird Barbie rescues her, but Weird Barbie has been unsuccessful in deprogramming the other Barbies. America Ferrari and her daughter decide they have to return and fight for Barbie Land and arrive at Weird Barbie's house, where Barbie admits that she doesn't feel like she is good enough. America Ferrara tries to comfort her, but goes on a frankly brilliant tirade about how difficult it is to be a woman, which breaks the spell on the other Barbies.
Made me cry the first time I heard that.
Yeah, it's really brilliantly done. They realise that all the other Barbies need to hear the message but have to be snuck away from their Ken's control in order to hear it. So we have a montage of, like, tricking Ken's into being distracted by man things.
Oh, funny.
Yeah. And then they sort of sneak the respected Barbies away and say, hey, have you considered this? And it sort of breaks the mental programming. sort of guerrilla feminism going on is kind of cool. The now deprogrammed Barbies decide to break the Ken's power by turning them against each other. As all the Barbies are being awkwardly serenaded, which is a whole thing, they change which Ken they're paying attention to, leading to a war between the Kens. This prevents the Kens' planned vote on enshrining their own power and gives the Barbies time to rebuild Barbie Land back the way it was. Arriving too late, the Kens realise that it's now Barbie Land again. Ken runs off crying and Barbie goes to comfort him. He admits that he actually hated running things because it was hard. Barbie apologises for taking him for granted, and Ken admits that he only exists in relation to her. Barbie explains that Ken needs to learn who he is and stop defining himself through externalities. Ken has the epiphany that he is his own person. The CEO overhears and agrees that leadership and masculinity are tough and exhausting. The Kens ask if they can have a role in government and are given a minor one, so far. America Ferrari pitches average Barbie to the CEO, who then agrees.
She doesn't get a cut. Pisses me off. This whole thing. She just gives her idea for free to Mattel, to a group of men. They say that's going to make millions of dollars. And she does not at any point suggest that she will be cut in or remunerated for her original ideas. Boo.
Yeah, fair. Barbie realises that she doesn't know what she wants anymore and that she doesn't feel like she is Barbie. Ruth reappears from earlier. It's noted that she is in fact a ghost and she's the creator of Barbie. As Will Ferrell says, her ghost has an office on the fourth floor.
Yeah. Which is
okay. Barbie leaves Barbie Land with Ruth and tells her that she wants to be human. Ruth warns her that mortality is difficult and painful, but Barbie decides she wants to be more than an idea and decides to move to reality permanently. She moves in with America Ferrara's family and books a gynecologist appointment. The end.
Yeah. Yay! Yeah. Excellent synopsis, Luke Haynes.
Thank you.
Well done. Interesting that you missed out. We'll talk about it, but Ryan Gosling has a song.
Ryan Gosling does have a song. Yeah.
I'm just Ken, and a long song and dance sequence that goes through several transformations. There's a huge set piece of the Kens fighting each other and then kind of reconciling through song.
Yeah, but I don't think it's. I think it goes on a bit. I'd cut a lot of that. It's really brilliant. I mean, as I said at the time, it's the best song and dance stuff we've seen from the guy that was in La La Land.
I hated La La Land.
That's a separate conversation.
Hot take.
Yeah.
La La Land. Yeah. No good. Anyway, maybe we'll do that at another point. Yeah. Speaking of films that are hot and of the moment.
Yes, topical.
I love this movie. So talk about things I love. There is so much that I think is really, really fantastic about this movie. So just on a sort of technical level as a film, it made me laugh out loud a lot of times when I saw it.
Yeah.
And I also cried. So, you know, I don't know what else you want really
you'll
in
laugh,
a movie.
You'll cry, yeah.
It is a vision to look at. It is in the months coming up to the Barbie movie being released, they kept releasing little behind the scenes trailers and like footage and clips, and it is such a visual feast, particularly if you are someone who likes, well, I mean, I love kitchen camp is where I live, but I also love set design and costume design and stuff, and it is incredible. It looks amazing. Everything about it looks is stunning. The cast are incredible, including all of the minor supporting cast. So Issa Rae as the president, there's just everybody, like Shuti Gatwa's in there, like Michael Cera's in there.
I said the most I've ever enjoyed Ryan Gosling, who I normally don't get the appeal of, but he's actually very good in this.
All of the principal cast and all of the supporting cast are superb. Yeah. It is beautifully acted all the way through and cast. And like I said, I love the gesture of it. And interestingly, I was listening to a BAFTA podcast with Margot Robbie, which there's a countdown to the BAFTAs podcast if you're interested, which focuses on each movie that has been nominated. And she was saying, so the Barbie movie is something that's been floating around Hollywood forever.
Yeah.
So Diablo Cody.
I mean, probably since Barbie was invented, right? As soon as
quite possibly, I mean, definitely, I think since the 80s. Sharon Stone was attached for a while. Diablo Cody, who wrote Jennifer's Body and. Yeah. Juno and lots of other stuff that you will know, Young Adult with Charlize Theron. She's one of my favourite screenwriters. She was attached to the Barbie movie for a while. It sort of had people on it, a lot of really high profile people on it and listed as potentially being Barbie and then not ever made it through.
Probably just like take the biggest blonde actress we've got in whatever year was, you know, like say if Sharon Stone was, you know, for a while.
But part of the issue is, okay, so... So there's a huge, we're living through the death throes of it, a period where at least for the last 10 years, everything has been IP. So intellectual property, which means it's already a book, a game, another movie from the past, a TV series, a fucking crisp packet. The Uno movie is a joke, long-running joke that is actually in the works.
Yeah, I hate to break it to you, but Mattel have taken entirely the wrong lesson from the success of Barbie, and now they've optioned basically everything else, Action Man. Like I say, Uno, the game, has long been mooted as potential property, all this stuff.
But the thing is about... So take, for example, like Game of Thrones, right? Yeah. That's a book series, there's a story.
Yeah.
Even like cartoon characters like Ninja Turtles, there are stories, they are characters. Barbie has no story attached to her.
No, she's kind of a blank slate, right?
She's a total blank slate, which is both a huge opportunity but also a really big challenge, because what is the story that you are going to tell of Barbie going on?
Yeah.
And interestingly, Margot Robbie said she... has had her eye on Barbie for years.
Yeah.
She has wanted to play Barbie and to use the Barbie movie specifically because she knows that it's, she said, like, it's a global brand that is equivalent to Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Like, Barbie is recognized all over the world. It is huge.
Yeah.
And she wanted to use that as a vehicle to do something really interesting and to do something feminist. So in case you don't know, Margot Robbie was the producer of Barbie as well. She has her own production company called Lucky Chap, who are absolutely fucking knocking it out of the park.
Yeah.
So Lucky Chap have recently made, they made I, Tonya, Promising Young Woman, Saltburn. They make loads of interesting stuff. They develop female talent largely. Also, obviously, vehicles for Margot Robbie, but that's partly using her star power to get things made.
Yeah.
And they are fiercely championing artists to do things that they want to do and to do risky work, because I think all of those films are, and the Barbie movie, examples of really bold filmmaking.
Yeah, Margot Robbie frustrates me just better than the rest of us. She's one of those people.
She just is. So, So she wanted this movie for ages. It finally, you know, the baton handed over of however many people have tried and failed to make a Barbie movie, and it became up for rights, and she grabbed it, and she grabbed it with Greta Gerwig, who is known as, like I said, an indie film darling. So she made things like Frances Ha in the 2000s, and then moved on. Lady Bird was one of her more recent ones, and then she started to get more mainstream. She did Little Women, was the last big thing that she made.
Which is not actually about Little Women. Although Barbie is about Little Women that you can buy in a shop.
It's what she specialises in. Now, can I do a big name drop?
Go on.
Greta Gerwig has read one of my scripts.
Clang!
Clang!
Mind your toes. Well done.
Thank you. She was a judge on an award that I was nominated for. I did not win the award. She may not have liked my script.
Well, still.
But still, she was forced to read it.
Yeah, she's heard of you. She was made to know who you are.
So, where I'm going with all of this is that they had to get buy-in from Mattel to make this movie.
Yeah.
So I think some of the problems that we get are about this having to use Barbie, take this thing that means a lot to people with the people who own it and work with them every step of the way.
Well, one of my first notes here is actually that, like, I don't think Mattel as a corporate entity, which obviously is not cuddly and fronted by Will Ferrell, it's a giant corporation and will kill you when you sleep if there's money in it. I don't think they would be happy with a lot of the messaging that's in this movie, and I think they've sort of snuck that in, like, under their noses a little bit. There's an element of sort of, like, stealth stuff going on here, right?
I think that Mattel were actually savvy enough to trust that Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig and the vision for what they were doing was a bold enough swing. I also think that Barbie's probably a brand that's been on the decline.
Yeah.
They've been desperately trying to rebrand Barbie because she's so old-fashioned and has sort of negative connotations. I mean, by the time I was growing up, we were already like, Barbie kind of sucks. Like, we don't really, it's not kind of cool. I think Barbie's not been cool for a long time.
Yes.
So I think that trying to make this in the 80s, in the height of, like, Barbie's dream house, is a very different proposition to making it now, when I think that Barbie's desperately trying to be cool and relevant, and they keep bringing out Barbies that are, like, more body positive and diverse and inclusive, and, you know.
I mean, I guess a fundamental problem with this is that, and I do agree with that initial point that, like, Barbie was a trailblazer in that it wasn't a baby, it was a woman that's aspirational. But also,
she owns her own house and car.
Yeah, throw your hands up at me. But my point, my point is that, like, ultimately what you play with Barbie is, hey, I've got a job, and that's not really very exciting for the kids, right? Especially not now. Like, I don't want my job. I don't want to go home and play with something that then has a different job.
I've got lost in this thread. You're not the target audience for Barbies.
No, but just kids in general. Like, if on one shelf you've got a mutant ninja turtle that can, like, do backflips and fight kung fu, and also is a turtle, and there's a lot that's really interesting and fun, whereas Barbie could be a lawyer, maybe. You know, like, what's the appeal of Barbie? She has a house,
I mean,
and a job.
Number one, outfits. That's the main.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But again,
Barbie's wardrobe is absolutely slamming.
But I have outfits. So they're like
You putting yourself in the place of someone who would buy a Barbie is confusing me so deeply. I think we're going to have to just drop it as a conversation.
I'm just saying that the appeal of toys should be that, like, the toy can do things that you as a person can't, whoever you are.
No, but you as a child can't be a lawyer.
No.
Or own a house or drive a convertible. No, so it's aspirational. Yeah. Kids play at being grown-ups. But little boys dress up as firemen and policemen and pretend to be cowboys.
But, well, you can't be a cowboy anymore, but one day you could be a doctor or a lawyer or what have you. But
You're saying the only play that's valid is fantasy play?
No, I'm just saying that that's more appealing because it's more fun.
Maybe to you.
Maybe that's just a me thing. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I could be a fireman. I could never be a Ninja Turtle. Barring some sort of mutation, I've gone to the weird place, haven't I?
You've derailed this so hard that I think that this will probably all get cut.
Okay, so circling back to Barbie. Meanwhile, back at the podcast.
Oh my god, you melted my brain.
I want to be a turtle.
Okay. One of the things I think is an issue with the Barbie movie is that this had to be a four-quadrant movie. And what that means is the audience needed to be divided up into how Hollywood divides up audiences. The way they do this is men over 25, men under 25, women over 25, women under 25. And a four quadrant movie roughly means it has to be a family movie. So a Pixar movie, Toy Story, is a four quadrant movie, right? Mm. In that it has appeal not just to families. Ultimately, what you want is not just parents taking kids. You want adults having their own relation to it without their children.
Yeah.
That means that people who don't have kids, like teenagers and people in their 20s, yeah, and just us, might want to go and see the movie as well. And obviously, the bigger the audience segment that you are going to get, the bigger the audience, the bigger the budget you can have for the movie, because the
more people
are going to watch it. Yeah. Yeah. So that you're going to get a better return on your investment. Because of how they wanted to do the Barbie movie, they knew, because it's a kid's toy, it needed to be a four quadrant movie in the first place, but also because of the scale of the ambition of what they wanted to make, they needed it. But my issue with the Barbie movie is I think that slightly derails it, and they haven't, by trying to fulfill, to be everything to everybody, they actually haven't. So I think that it's not really a kid's film.
No.
This was one of my biggest objections. So both of the times that I was in the cinema watching it, I was sat near children.
Yeah.
And I'm someone who has written work for family audiences as well. So I'm quite sort of attentive to children as an audience and what they are interested in. And I think that the Barbie movie specifically, because it is about Barbie, should really cater to children as well. And I think that this film actually... I don't know how successful this is as a kids' movie.
Yeah, I hadn't considered that. I mean, like the greatest, you know, the greatest of all time at this are the Muppets, right?
Yeah.
Where like, look, even if you're like, if you're two, there's a fuzzy, fun, colourful thing that you can look at, and they're still doing nods to the adults as well, and they manage to hit every note on that scale.
Yeah.
Whereas I think you're right. I hadn't considered this, but yeah, there's a lot of this is like material about feminism and jokes about how society is run by men, which. Is not necessarily playing to the kids.
Right? Exactly. I think what they do is they, every so often, after quite a lot of a very adult conversation, they'll inject a dance sequence or a chase or something where there's action and there's movement. I think if you're a child, you'll be able to follow the broad emotional brushstrokes of the movie, in that there are bits where it's clearly happy and bits where Barbie is obviously sad.
Yeah.
But I think that I would be really interested to talk to some kids and see if they could communicate the plot to me effectively.
Yeah.
Because I think that it doesn't work on two levels. One, I think it's fine to occasionally have quite adult dialogue in something, you know, talk about something like the patriarchy or whatever. I'm not a huge fan of it. I prefer it if everybody can access it all the time. I try when I'm writing something for a family to not put in too many like nods to the parents. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I prefer to keep the jokes accessible for everybody as much as possible. It's very, very difficult to do that. I think that the dialogue is too adult most of the time, but I also think that just thematically trying to understand the plot of the Barbie movie is conceptually really challenging.
Yeah.
It's talking about huge adult ideas like patriarchy, and I just don't think that it's satisfying for children. And the kids that I was sat near, there was one little girl in particular, she must have been about 5 or 6, probably has Barbies at home. She was really fidgeting and getting up. She left the movie twice. I don't think it works as a kids movie, and I think that is a big missed opportunity for me. And I think if they were going to make it just an adult movie, that's fine.
Well, one of my sort of big overarching notes is that ultimately the issues that we're dealing with might be bigger than a children's toy. Like, maybe this is not the best vehicle to try to I appreciate that they're trying to do, like I say, stealth feminism or guerrilla feminism, where they're sort of trying to like sneak it past the censors, or not the censors, but sneak it past culture.
Yeah, yeah.
But maybe we can't really deconstruct all of like heteronormative patriarchal society using a plastic doll, unless you know.
Because also you have to pull your punches, right?
This is my other big problem with this, is that like it doesn't really blame anybody for the state of society when like there's a lot of really
capitalism.
Exactly. You can't blame capitalism when like Mattel is a character in your movie that you're trying to portray favorably.
Yeah.
And also there's a lot of this sort of like, oh man, it doesn't really take the patriarchy on other than as an unfortunate thing that seems to have just happened somehow.
Yes.
Which is not like, and then we sort of veer a little bit dangerously close to this sort of incel territory of like, oh, it's not Ken's fault, it's Barbie's fault for ignoring him a bit, which they were kind of skirting into, like, oh, it's the fault of females because they won't sleep with us.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, this is getting into
exactly.
Some
and then because
stuff.
It's the Barbie movie, it skirts very slightly towards rape culture. So when Barbie, you know, first goes in the real world, she says she feels suddenly really self-conscious and unsafe, and that there's an air of violence. Men are catcalling her. A guy slaps her ass.
Yeah.
So, but obviously it's the Barbie movies, so can't properly talk about that. And it can't also, and obviously doesn't and can't talk about male violence, which is, but the threat of violence and sexualized violence in particular is an enormous component in the power of the patriarchy, right? And in the power disparity between men and women. Yeah. So this was my point number two. It's trying to do far too many things.
Yeah.
Because it's trying to satisfy four quadrants of an audience, which they, and they did, and you know, they test screened it. They said it was like, Mattel was like, we have to be able to get men under 25 to want to watch this movie. And apparently it was a huge hit with teenage boys when they did test screenings. Because it's trying to cater to everybody, and also, that's hard enough on its own, but also tackle these enormous, incredibly complex, big societal issues and do that in a children's movie.
Yeah.
Obviously it fails on quite a lot of fronts. It misses things, it confuses things, it doesn't properly address things, and that it is, there is an unsatisfying edge to it.
Well, yeah, like you say, you can't, right?
In
the same way that, like, I mean, to bring them up again, like, you can't do the, you know, you see those like t-shirts and things where people like suggest doing the Muppets version, because, you know, the Muppets did the Christmas Carol and Treasure Island, and people are like, oh yeah, Muppet Reservoir Dogs, or something, which is a funny idea, but you can't do that, right?
Yeah,
and it's the same
yeah.
thing here, like, you can't really address rape culture with a children's toy, right?
No, of course you can't.
And, you know, like, I've argued...
Not in a children's movie.
Yes, yeah. I've discussed for years with a friend of mine, like, can we do the Muppets version of Predator? Like, which Muppet plays which role in Predator, right? Which is a great fun idea. But you couldn't actually make it, right?
Yeah.
And it's that whole thing. It's like, it becomes a little bit lightweight. Have you got more on this?
Yeah, I've got loads more on this.
Okay,
so... just from a technical standpoint, you can feel the point where the movie is trying to take on too many things. And there's a sort of point, I think, sort of three quarters of the way through, where you feel it just straining and struggling to kind of contain and resolve these things. And then what we end up with is not a very satisfying narratively. So, for example, Barbie is the main character.
Yeah.
She's the titular character. She starts a literal...
That means title.
Title. She starts a literal hero's journey. She goes to Kate McKinnon with Barbie. She gives her a quest and Barbie sets off on that quest. About just past the halfway point, Barbie literally gives up on the quest. She says, it's too difficult and I'm not doing it anymore. And she lies down on the ground and she won't get up. And America Ferrera has to get her up.
Yeah.
And part of the problem is, and then we, this is the point where the movie really derails for me, because at this point, Ken has overtaken the Barbie land, but he also overtakes the fucking movie.
Yeah.
And we then spend a huge time swerving into Ken's emotional journey, Ken's world, Ken's conflict, Ken's song. And I found it, I think probably my overarching thing when I came out from the Barbie movie the first time, is that the Barbie movie largely becomes about Ken.
Yeah.
And this, I think, has been reflected in the fact that Ryan Gosling's the only one who's been nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
In terms of the cast, I think America Ferrera has been supported, but like Margot Robbie has not been nominated for an Oscar, which is, and she gives an incredible performance in this. And Ken has a song, Barbie doesn't have a song, and Ken's song has charted out of the soundtrack that is made up of female artists, of Dua Lipa, of Lizzo, of Charlie XCX, all did music for this. And then Ryan Gosling is the one. So this is sort of emblematic for me of the problem. And part of that is because Barbie, in story terms, Barbie is carrying too much narrative weight. There is too much complexity in what she's trying to do. She literally buckles under it and it's no fucking fun. And the person who's having lots of fun is Ken.
Yeah.
And they let him be fun. And this is another problem in comedy, in that male characters are allowed to be silly and funny and goofy. Margot Robbie's Barbie stops being fun really early on.
Well, I think they're hamstrung a little bit with the character of Barbie, because and they address this right off the bat in this film, kind of by definition, Barbie is perfect, right?
Yeah.
And perfect characters are very hard to have fun. This is the problem when trying to write like Superman as well, is a real problem with this, where like the supporting cast can have fun, but Superman has to be completely straight edge and completely straight down the line, and can't have too much wrong with him.
I disagree though, because I think that what they do is they show her as perfect, and then she stops being perfect. Yeah. That's her problem, right?
Yeah, and then they just kind of ignore that as the main thrust of the plot.
They drop it. So I think that where Barbie ends up going is that she becomes human, and I think there's a really interesting thing from her going living in this perfect bubble, but this bubble is not complex. She's then introduced to complexity. Decides that she likes having feelings. We see her cry for the first time, and she says it's amazing.
I hated that ending. This is like, I've tried to sort of number my notes, and then my ones
again, partly why we're struggling is because it's a really complex movie. Which bit of the ending? Because I also hated several parts of the ending.
I hate this. My note here says that Barbie is a great start point for feminism, in that she or it can plant the seeds of an idea, and you can't kill an idea. But then at the end of the film, Barbie decides she rejects being just an idea. And the whole point is that, like, an idea is bigger than a person. Like, the idea, I'd rather be more than an idea, I'd rather be a person. I was like, no, the idea is bigger than the person, always, right? Do you know what Che Guevara's last words were?
What?
The guy that was going to execute him, he said, "Go ahead, boy, shoot, you're only going to kill a man."
Yeah.
And you know why I know that? Because the idea fucking endured past him, because he was right, right? And, like, what Barbie should realise, I think, logically, is the thing that we talk about at the start of the film, which is that, like, the concept of Barbie is sort of infinite.
Yeah,
right?
but then you've got there's a pull there in trying to take a hero's journey in a story is about a character undergoing change. She needs to. Most stories are a character undergoes change on the journey that they go through, right? And if you're going to take her through that, her wanting to be human and becoming human is an interesting journey for a character to go on. I see what you mean, kind of. But the other way to do that, and there some characters do this, so my favourite example of this is Paddington. Paddington Bear never, ever, ever changes. Yeah. He changes the world because he is a force of goodness, of kindness.
Well, this is the other version of the story. This is the Knight Errant. This is most Western. This is the Jack Reacher franchise, like Lee Child, the writer, so that Reacher never changes. He turns up. This is the Lone Ranger, right?
He
turns up, fixes everybody's problems, and then moves on.
Yeah, and I think it would be really fun if Barbie was that. Yeah. If it's Barbie finds value in her essential Barbiness, which is about kind of optimism, right, and openness.
But then that's the movie Legally Blonde, right?
Yeah.
Which is
a great movie.
Yeah, which is actually very similar,
My big problems with the ending, I think that Barbie's journey feels like a bummer, and I hate, and I have always hated, and I hate with such a passion that it ends with her going to the gynecologist.
Really?
And I hate it for a number of reasons, which I will try to briefly expound upon now. One, it's a really cheap joke to end what is supposed to be quite a sort of profound journey on, and it isn't a funny enough joke to justify that, because going to the gynecologist for a smear test, I've never found it funny once. It isn't fun. It's invasive and unpleasant and sometimes extremely painful. So I don't think that is a fun and optimistic ending. And it feels like... So I don't think that smear tests are funny. I don't think anyone with a vagina who's ever had one would particularly find them that funny.
Yeah.
And I don't think that... it doesn't feel like a reward, right? You're like, oh, so what you get for being a woman and going on this as a character, having undergone trials, then you go through this and your reward is something that sucks about being a woman.
I would push back on this. I quite liked that. I get that it is a bit of a...
You've never had a smear test. Let me get a speculum and we're going to experiment how you feel about this.
Okay, and I will try to keep talking whilst we're doing this. It's going to make for interesting listening for everybody. I get that it is a bit of a cheap joke that she sort of almost turns to the camera and shrugs, and then we sort of zoom out like a cartoon, right? Sort of a whack whack ending. But I think the point that it's making is that, yes, being a human woman kind of sucks sometimes and is awkward and painful and embarrassing, but it's ultimately worth it. I think that's the point they're trying to make with that.
But it also, the other thing that I don't like that it does, and that the movie never addresses and sort of can't escape from, is gender essentialism, right?
Yes,
which is
I've
that...
got this as a note.
Barbie Land is extremely diverse, except for everybody is very, very male, cis male or cis female.
Yeah.
That trans identity or non-binary identity doesn't exist in Barbie Land. It's like the one kind of area that they just can't touch and don't go near. And then you're saying at the end, with this ending, you're reinforcing that her biggest thing of being a human woman is her vagina, is going to the gynecologist. And
I've
also
actually got
hate
this
that.
As a note that we've it does like make gender politics adversarial for
yes,
like, that mid period
really
where
does.
Like, and we also scheme into that territory of like men are dumb and women are manipulative.
Yes.
That's how they succeed with their plan, right? Is that men are stupid and easy to be... And, but again, without ever digging down on, like, why women are manipulative, which is that, like, there's a threat of violence, so you have to be smarter than the other person who could beat you to death otherwise, right? That's the... Which, again, you can't do with kids' toys because then it's getting too dark. Yeah. But that is the basis of that.
I just have to bridle against you going, why women are manipulative.
Yeah, I know, in inverted commas.
I think... And, you know, I want to just make it clear as well. I'm not just saying this from some sort of like woke playbook of like, oh, they should have included non-binary people. I'm saying it from my own lived experience as someone who is quite gender fluid. I think probably I'm non-binary, really. I don't identify. My relationship to gender is that it is something within me that fluctuates quite a lot of feeling quite masculine or feeling quite feminine.
Not and me, baby.
And I don't think that having a vagina or a uterus defines me in any way, shape or form. I feel so
I'm over here building a shed.
It's difficult to go through.
Yeah.
And similarly, narratively, Ken, I don't find Ken's ending... It feels like... Okay, firstly, what is Ken's ending? One...
Yeah, he doesn't really have an ending.
He doesn't really have an ending.
He wanders off, not tied to Barbie anymore.
He starts fighting with the other Kens. They seem to resolve that through song. Him and his... other Ken that he's been fighting literally end the song holding hands and singing together.
Yeah.
And then they can't remember what they've been fighting about. So that kind of ends. But then he does, but then he goes back to Barbie and he does have a crisis because Barbie doesn't want him. And then the way they resolve that crisis is he says, he's like, I'm Ken, Ken is me. I'm Ken, Ken is me. Yeah. And then he just seems happy and goes down a slide and keeps saying that. And I'm like, I don't feel like you've narratively resolved that. If what you're trying to say is that you need to be an independent person, which I think is what they're saying, but there's just something about that scene and those beats where it doesn't land.
Yeah, and also, like, if the message is, like, men need more independence, I think we've kind of got it already. It's not really a...
Yeah.
Like, we don't need, like, more male liberation in society. We're pretty much free to do whatever we want. It's
And like you say, there's a lot of really uncomfortable gender stuff in how the Barbie movie works. So, for example, when the Barbies run Barbie Land as a matriarchy... They aren't cruel to the Kens. They don't oppress them in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
The men are just kind of irrelevant decoration. Yeah. And sort of they do have a second class kind of citizenship.
Yeah.
And I can understand that you want to have a journey where that's resolved and there's parity. But they don't end it with, we've got Barbie Land and Ken Land.
No.
And they don't subdivide the houses.
Well, again, that would set up a sort of us against them. Nurse, which is probably not a good idea.
Yeah,
I didn't.
But
like...
when the Kens do patriarchy, they oppress the Barbies, and so it's a false equivalency to say that a matriarchy is as bad as a patriarchy, particularly how it's been set up.
Yeah, true. I also don't like that at the end, like the Kens ask if they can have a seat on the Supreme Court, and they don't get it. They're not allowed one. They're allowed like a minor role.
Well, it says that, when the voiceover comes in and says, when women have that, then it will have it in Barbie Land. Again, it's really complex. Yeah.
Do you have fixes?
I do.
Okay, good.
I do have fixes. Okay, so one of my fixes, and this, again, these are just... I really want to reiterate that I think it's incredible that this movie got made.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much they pushed the boundaries, that they got Mattel and this huge budget to do something that is so subversive.
Yeah.
And I admire so much what they do.
I really like 2/3 of it, put it that way.
Yeah, I do as well. Yeah. And I think that the faults are due to ambition. They're due to an overreaching ambition of trying to do so much.
I didn't cover this actually. I just want to touch on it briefly. Part of the problem is that it doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
The rules of the world don't make any sense.
And they just make a joke about it as well.
Yeah, and some of this is okay. We always like go to Jaws as a go-to example of things, but for a reason, right?
Yeah.
And Peter Benchley, who wrote the book Jaws, which is terrible, by the way, it's a rare example of the film being better than the book. Peter Benchley, who wrote the book, at the end of the book, the shark just dies of its injuries. It's like a massively anticlimactic ending for the... Yeah, it's a shit book. And then Peter Benchley, like, collared Steven Spielberg and said, like, at the ending of the movie, he said, you know, if you shoot a compressed air tank, it doesn't actually explode. And Spielberg said, look, if I've got the audience on side this far, they'll buy the air tank thing. It's fine.
Yeah.
Which is, like, words to live by, right? Like, if the audience is having enough fun, the technical details aren't really important because we all want to see the shark blow up.
Yeah,
right? So fine, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Back to the Future is another great example of this. I know you hate time travel movies because they get too complicated and you start trying to think through the logic of it and then it totally derails everything else. And Back to the Future just avoids that because we're all having enough fun that we don't care. Yep. Right? So, like, if you stop and think about it, wait, none of this really actually makes sense when you think about it. Yep. But we're inventing skateboards and playing Johnny B. Goode, so fine. Let's all, and I think Barbie is doing this fairly well for most of it. Like, we're having enough fun that the fact that this doesn't really hang together, it kind of gets away with it. Yeah. But again, like a lot of stuff, in that sort of last third, it kind of breaks down a little bit. The Ruth character talking about how, like, Barbie has evolved beyond what she dreamed for her. We're getting into this weird sort of, like...
Oh, it's conceptually a nightmare.
Like, your creation is has become sentient, now wants to be a real woman, but also you're a ghost. I don't know what's going on here. And if we want to have a conversation about, like, the things we created taking on sentience and wanting to be more than the sum of their parts... in a movie with Ryan Gosling, then that's Blade Runner 2049. Suddenly we're in this weird AI territory. That's all very weird. And I don't really understand the rules, and there's a lot of stuff where they're making jokes about it, like you say, but there's an element of, like, if you call out a plot hole in the script, I hate when people do this, it doesn't excuse the plot hole.
They do it a lot. They do it quite a lot.
These days it's very, very common to do, like, a self-referential beat to say, yeah, we know. And you go, well, don't say, yeah, we know, fix it.
Yeah.
And it goes into that territory a bit. So I just wanted that on record, is that some of the problems are caused by the fact that this doesn't quite make sense. It doesn't quite fit in with itself at any point.
Yeah. In contrast, I will say this movie, from a sort of classical screen, you know, if I got my fucking textbook rules out of like what we roughly say of how you should do them, it breaks a lot of rules and I don't care.
Yeah.
So it has but one song.
Yeah,
which is, or you know, which, where Ken sings, like, you know, what musicals? What is it? Yeah. You know, you can't. I would say classically, you can't have one song. I don't care about. Well, I do care a bit, but not in a rules way. Yeah. Just because of how it affects the characters.
Yeah.
It does. The rules of the world don't make any sense. You're completely right, and it also lampshades that. It points it out that the rules don't make sense. It has some incredibly on-the-nose writing, including in the voiceover. America Ferrera's speech, I think, on paper, I would really react against it. I'm like, oh my God, there's no subtext. You're just listing your complaints. But because it's so powerful and it's so unsaid, it made me cry.
Oh, it's great. It's fantastic. It's probably the best moment in the film.
Which is weird because it's both technically a terrible bit of writing and also an incredible bit of writing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's several things like that. And like I said, Barbie starts a hero's journey, completely abandons it halfway through, it becomes several different people's stories. It does break a lot of rules, but I think it earns the right to do that in a lot of ways.
But like I say, we're having enough fun that we're getting away with it for the most part. Yeah.
So, all right, so move on to some fixes before we talk about this till the end of time. Okay, I would strip back on a lot of the incredibly adult jokes.
Yeah.
Because I think it is alienating as a child to feel like things are going over your head and the adults are laughing and that you are being excluded from that. And I think for me, I think a few is okay. I think it does it too many times. I think there are points where this movie is in love with how clever it is, and that actually, while those jokes are kind of good, you get a laugh because it's kind of shocking that it's there. So like when Barbie says, I do not have a vagina, you know, like you're not expecting her to say that.
Yeah.
But I don't know how effective I feel like some of those jokes are alienating and exclusionary and don't work for the audience. And I would strip back on that. I would make it more family orientated to include kids in that, because I would love little kids, and I hope they do, I would love them to come out feeling empowered by this, not excluded. Okay. Ken's subplot.
Yeah. So we need less Ken.
We need to... make Barbie needs to be as fun as Ken. I don't think the answer to this is to make Ken more serious or to carry more narrative weight or to make him have less fun. I think Barbie needs to be having as much fun in her plot as Ken is having in his, because we need that Ken stuff. And I think that the Ken emphasis is what got it through the quadrants of both, in terms of it being really the goofiest and most fun stuff.
They call that Kenphasis, by the way.
But I do find it galling that Ken comes out as the hero of this movie so hard, as kind of culturally as the most fun character, the character with the merch, the character with the song. I think Barbie needs a song.
Yeah.
And I think that Ryan Gosling's got a particularly incredible voice. I don't know why he's become this big musical actor.
I don't think Ryan Gosling is particularly incredible anything. It's been baffling me for years.
He is extremely funny in this movie.
He is funny. Like I said, I like him a lot in this. I've never thought he was as good looking as people make out. I haven't seen La La Land, but you've shown me of it. He can't sing or dance particularly.
It's not great. But I think it is just a fucking crime that Barbie doesn't have a song. And I don't care if Margot Robbie can sing or not. And I think that
I'm sure she can.
I'm sure she can because she's perfect. But I think that the world is so irreverent that it would be... What you could do is you could either play it that it's funny that Barbie can't sing,
yeah.
or you could play it that, like, she puts on a Ariana Grande outfit and suddenly Ariana Grande's voice is coming out of Margot Robbie because Barbie can be anything because she can transform. So give Barbie a fucking song. Come on. And I think that her song should be at the end, because what I would love, when I was watching this, all the times I've watched it, the opening section in Barbie Land where all the women are really empowered and it's this incredible sisterhood is so joyful and something I want so much.
Yeah.
And I would love it if, rather than going to the gynecologist part of it, fucking office, Barbie has a party like the party she has with her fellow Barbies in the real world with America Ferrera and all the women.
Yeah.
How fun would that be? Yeah. And how joyful. And, like, if this is what you're saying Barbie's gift is to the world,
prove that it can be done.
Make it be Barbie's gift to the world and end on a huge big high that sends us out like singing and soaring and so happy and feeling empowered. And I think that that is what this movie would really need. I think that...
Can I just say, as a minor point, I'm so gratified that we didn't use the song Barbie Girl by Aqua. I hated that song in the 90s. I'm very glad that it's not present in this movie.
It is on the soundtrack at the very end, plays on the credits.
We can ignore that.
I'd like you say, I think that there is, it really derails towards the end, and a lot of this is how the Barbies oust the Kens. And like you say, it falls into these stereotypes that women are manipulative and stuff. And some of it's really funny, and I don't mind them, like, pretending to, that they've never seen The Godfather, right?
Yeah.
To get the, because that's funny. But what I hate is when the Barbies make the Kens sexually jealous by pairing up with a Ken and then visibly cheating on him with another Ken by showing interest. I found that really distasteful every single time. I don't know what... If that's supposed to be empowering, I don't think it is. I don't think that that's great feminism.
Yeah.
I think that...
Yeah, be slutty to make men jealous is not a great lesson to teach kids.
You're right.
Yeah.
And I think that fundamentally, even though he kind of... Ryan Gosling just says, oh, the patriarchy wasn't fun. I didn't enjoy it.
Yes, this is a big note that I've got. Like, show, don't tell on that one. Because we get that one line about it and that's it. And so... If I can jump in.
Yeah.
One of my fixes is show the men, like, they get to be in charge, they invent the patriarchy, and then they hate it.
Yes, right? And that's exactly my fix.
Just have scenes of them, like, not like... And the other thing, that have them privately admitting this to all their respective Barbies, right? And I've got a note here that, like, if you listen to sex workers, it's a really, really common thing that men just want to talk to strippers or prostitutes a lot of the time. Like, because, horny is an acute condition, whereas lonely is chronic, right? So, like, a lot of people that go to, like, the same strip club or the same sex worker a lot of the time, they end up, like, ignoring the sex and they just want somebody to talk to.
They want intimacy.
Yeah, like, men are sort of lonely and it's difficult being a man, and that's what you need to hit, right?
Yes.
Like, they're all in charge now and they all privately hate it, and they're all just talking to these women saying, like, we don't like it, we want to go back to because patriarchy hurts men as well. That's one of the big fucking bullet points.
And this movie's got such a perfect opportunity to show that the patriarchy hurts men.
Yeah.
And I think that exactly that. I think that you show, I think the Barbies completely become as useless. I think what's more fun is if the Barbies go as useless as the Kens want them or say they want them to be. And suddenly the Kens have got to take the bins out and make decisions and do tax.
Yeah.
And they hate it, the weight of it. And also, like get emotionally frustrated.
Yeah.
And I think that you either show that in the real world, or you show that in Barbie Land, or there's also a possibility. I wondered if after the Barbies retake Barbie Land, and the Kens go into the real world to talk to Mattel and to try and have patriarchy in the real world.
Yeah.
And maybe the executives at Mattel could give them that lesson about, like, oh, it's actually like
they
catch one of them crying in a break room because his butt, you know, because he doesn't know how to deal with it. I think exactly show, don't tell, that the patriarchy isn't an effective system. Don't just say it's not fun because it's not about horses.
Yeah.
Like, I think there are child friendly, fun ways of explaining this point and looking at it. So I think those are really my biggest ones. And I think Barbie's journey, I think Barbie needs to remain the main character, which she doesn't feel like she is. And I think that there is a big question here about what is Barbie's emotional journey. Is it, we make it a clearer journey of, I was this artificial thing and I learned to have feelings and I decide that I want to be human because it's beautiful. Or does she decide that she's going to remain an idea? And I think that what would have been really fun to explore this in a less on the nose way is if America Ferrera and Barbie swap.
Yeah.
And so if America Ferrera is like, I'm exhausted. I want to come and be in Barbie Land. And then she goes to Barbie Land, finds out it's not satisfying for whatever reasons, because it's repetitive and superficial.
Yeah.
And Barbie goes and tries to have America Ferrera's life and finds that that's really stressful and that they understand each other in a different way.
I had a similar one, like an entire other version of this movie that I had was have Barbie be vapid and perfect and alone, and ultimately learn that while her life is perfect in terms of material acquisition, her owner is sad because she doesn't know how to dream of being more. Her owner ultimately makes friends with other girls whose Barbies are doctors and lawyers and such, leading Barbie and her girl to realise they can be anything, and in the process creating Barbie Land. Maybe Ken is like always happy and thinks that Barbie should be happy too because of all the nice stuff she has, but like, you know, that's a that's an entirely separate plot. But that was the version. But again, then we're sort of bringing this into a very anti-capitalist vein of like, and that doesn't sell toys, right? I don't think Mattel would let you have, like, it's not enough to just buy all the stuff when...
But I tell you what, the main thing that I think would fucking sell, and it's written as a joke, but it's actually, I think, horribly true from this movie, is all the Ken stuff. I mean, the only merch that I've seen people really go for is the I Am Knuff hoodie, which is the sort of thing you come out of the movie going, yeah, I want one of those. Yeah. And then the I Am Ken single was the thing that charted. So... yeah, it is. It's a tricky one. It's this, like we said, this podcast has been 4 days long. Thank you for listening. It's incredibly complex and audacious and bold, and I applaud it so hard.
Yeah, I both like it and wish it was better, which is a hard.
I know,
yeah.
I know. But I do think what they've made is remarkable.
I tried to seed something halfway through this and then completely gave up on it, which was there was a Matrix beat and I did a little sound effect in it. Because we are next looking at, we're considering... because somehow, probably due to the linear passage of time in a forwards direction, but somehow, it's now been 25 years since the year 1999.
No. It hasn't.
I refuse to acknowledge that as well. And we started looking at films that came out in 1999, and it's a really interesting cultural year.
Such an interesting year.
It was like the year of The Matrix, Fight Club, American Beauty. American Pie as well, funny enough.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of like big ones.
Really big, culturally sort of impactful movies came out in 1999. So we're considering doing a 1999 series.
Yeah, it's been 25 years somehow, and we're just going to look back and go, hey, this was very weird.
Obviously, this will be the first time I've seen any of these movies because I was just a baby.
Yeah, you missed it. I missed them the first time around.
I absolutely didn't see any of these things in the cinema.
Of course not. Okay, and this is our shiny new outro because we actually edited this episode for length. It was longer than that. And we're just going to tack on a quick outro to say, if you want to get in touch with us, we are no longer on Twitter, really, because who is?
It's a Nazi hellscape.
Yeah, that's the one. So we are now arthallpodcast@gmail.com if you want to email us. And speaking of Nazi hellscapes, we're going to have to do Oppenheimer, we decided, for the sake of... so, yeah.
Yep. And also, we do have this thing. We don't have Patreon anymore, but we do have Buy Us a Coffee. We need a few more people to buy us a coffee to get us over a threshold.
Yes. So... the threshold of owning a coffee, I think.
We'll add a link. It's a way that you can give us a tip, just a tip, to see how it feels.
Yeah, you made it weird again. Okay, bye everybody. We're trying to Oppenheimer.
Sorry, bye.